It's time for the Ronin role-playing podcast. Join Scormy as he plays through various tabletop role-playing games entirely on his own. Some are specifically designed for solo play, while with others he will be using a GM emulator. Regardless, come enjoy the strange world of solo role-playing with your host, Scormy.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to a special preview episode of our changing podcast. What was once Knights of the Tabletop, starting Monday, is going to be Ronin Role Playing. I'm your host, Squirmy, and, well, I'm not going to get into the hows and whys of why we've made this change. That'll all become apparent in time. I discussed it all in the upcoming episode on Monday, but I figured it's Halloween, and so why not drop a preview episode on you, give you an idea of what's coming in the future, but a little bit different. Also a way to celebrate Halloween, which if y'all have listened to the podcasts I do over at Scormy.com, and if you're not, why aren't you? But if you've listened to that stuff before, you know I am an ardent fan of Halloween. It's my favorite holiday of the year. And so we're doing something a little special for this. Also, this is going to be a recurring trend on this podcast. Now, what is this podcast, Ronin Role Playing? Well, the name should say it all. A Ronin was in feudal Japan a samurai who was either disgraced or lost his master, or for some reason became effectively a gun for hire, a solo warrior. They often would just, as I understand it, take jobs as they could. Effectively a samurai for hire, and worked solo, or was, you know, known to not be connected to any one master or any one army or anything like that. Now, I may be butchering that, but that is my understanding of it. Please don't attack me. I understand I am not Japanese, so yeah, I'm not trying to step on anybody's heritage. I'm really not. It was a cool name for a podcast. I'm sorry if that offends someone. I really am. But that all said, that's where the name comes from. And it's still an actual play. We are not losing that. What we lost, unfortunately, was the rest of the cast. Like I said, I'm not going to get into the hows and whys. It just became too difficult to do Knights of the Tabletop any longer. Working over the internet wasn't exactly the best plan. So, what does that leave me with? Well, me. So, since I'm stuck at home during the pandemic, I decided, you know what? There's this little thing called solo tabletop role-playing out there. Something I had scoffed at in the past. What could this possibly be? How could you possibly do tabletop role-playing alone? Well, there's plenty of ways. That's what we're exploring on this podcast now. Starting on Monday, and every Monday thereafter, I will be playing different games every couple months. You know, just jumping into a game, making a character usually on the first episode of that period. Usually goes 8 to 9 weeks long, depending on the months involved, and I just play through it. Sometimes over those 2 months, you'll get two different stories, you know, two complete one-shots using the same characters, sometimes with different characters through necessity, like with Mythos World. Spoilers, but it doesn't go well for my characters. Still entertaining, though. It turned out I'm a really harsh game master on myself. Who would have known? Anyway, point is, I play both game master for myself and the players and the NPCs. It's kind of different. It's definitely a unique experience to which I'm greatly enjoying. Anyway, so that all out of the way, this is going to be a little different from what we'll normally be hearing because this is all going to be one long episode as a nice preview. So it's likely going to go longer than the normal shows, which I'm trying to stick to the half hour per week battle plan that we used with Knights of the Tabletop. So Ronin role-playing each week is going to be roughly half an hour or so per episode. This, as a preview, is going to go as long as it needs to. Hopefully not too long. I know you got better things to do on Halloween. Every year, though, on Halloween, we're going to be throwing another one of these special episodes at you. And of course, they're going to be horror game based. So enjoy that. There will be no dragon today, no zombies, no nothing, no timekeeping whatsoever. I'm just going to play until I find that the story has reached a natural conclusive end. Now, towards that end, how do you do a solo role-playing game? Well, you can do it either with a regular role-playing game, using an oracle such as Mythic Game Master Emulator, CRGE, the Game Master's Apprentice. Those are all ones I like to use. Or you can use a game that's designed specifically with solo play or cooperative non-game master play involved. That's where you have a bunch of players, but no game master. And it uses what they call oracles built into the game to let you answer basic yes-no questions, to come up with randomized solutions. And it's not necessarily as cohesive as the sort of play you would get with a game master. But you can build some really, really interesting stories, as you'll find over the coming months. You'll find some really interesting stories by doing it this way. Now, thus far, I've been playing completely solo, using oracles to lead my game mastering of myself. Now, the thing is that you use oracles as inspiration for your imagination. So if I draw something or roll something on one of these and it doesn't quite fit with the circumstance, I can twist it and go, I think more it's going to be this. And that's how I tend to be harsh on myself, because I tend to go heavy-handed as a game master on myself, where I used to throw softballs at my group in Knights of the Tabletop. Yeah, I'm throwing hardballs all day long at myself here. You'll see that soon enough, I'm sure. Now then, that's the basics of solo roleplay. We'll get into the details soon enough. What are we playing today, though? Well, this is a game that I backed last year on Kickstarter. It is, I saw it and I read over the synopsis for it and I said, you know what? I don't really know about this whole solo role-playing thing because it's built specifically for solo role-playing. But it looked like a really interesting setting, something I could adapt to other horror games. And then I got it and went, I was already kind of into solo role-playing at that point when I finally arrived. And I'm like, yeah, first things first, I bought the really nice limited edition version. So I had to go and buy a second soft cover edition of it for actual playing. The limited edition is in my collection, not to be touched, so it stays pristine. Secondly, the author came out with a nice set of cards to go with the game to use as like randomizing parts of the oracle. Instead of having to roll dice to come up with stuff, you can draw for encounters and discoveries and events you might encounter. And I find that to be super, super helpful. So I got the cards. It's called the mission cards, I believe. But the game itself is a little something called Seekers Beyond the Shroud. It's out from Black Oath Entertainment and published through Exalted Funeral. So if you go to Exalted Funeral's website, you'll be able to pick this up, or you can get it on DriveThruRPG. The mission deck you get directly from DriveThruRPG, either as a PDF you can print yourself, or I would suggest going ahead and buying the physical cards, as they print them up really quick. They're very nice quality. I'm very impressed with them. And you're not blowing through a whole bunch of ink trying to print these cards. So anyway, what is Seekers Beyond Seekers Beyond the Shroud? Well, basically, it's an occult investigation game. It's got some similarities to Call of Cthulhu in that you're an investigator who is dealing with cultists and supernatural entities and whatnot, all that sort of thing. But it's not as Cthulian as you'd think. It's more ancient gods and fairies and cultists trying to bring about, get ancient powers and bring evil into the world and all kinds of stuff. But you work with secret societies that are pockets of like-minded magicians working together, and you're trying to build influence with them so that you can gain talents and knowledge and power within the supernatural community. In a way, it feels very much like the Secret World role-playing game from Funcom. Currently, you can play that as Secret World Legends, as it's a free-to-play game from Funcom again, and one of my favorite games, actually. It has a very distinct feel like that, okay? Although instead of being tied specifically to one faction, you can build up influence with multiple factions at the same time, building and losing influence as you go along. You also bounce between order and chaos, and you gain ritual knowledge, you learn magic, you bind spirits to yourself to gain power, you can travel into the astral. It's very in-depth. As for the system, it is a kind of D20-based system, but it also has a D100 vibe to it. So it's got some, I would say it's got some influences from the old school revival games, which are based upon old 1970s style tabletop role-playing games. You know, those sorts of systems that were a lot more game master decision heavy and not, you know, a little more rules light. This is kind of an in-between balance. You use D20s for initiative, and pretty much everything else is D10s or D100s, with a few other minor differences. You know, there's the occasional weird roll, but it's all detailed in the book. Not a huge book. Anyway, give it a look. It is an excellent, excellent solo role-playing game. I would say it's a nice way to jump into the idea of solo role-playing, because everything's in one book. You don't have to go and get a separate oracle like Mythic to then try to adapt and work with or on top of the game you're wanting to play. It's not like trying to play D&D using Mythic to replace your game master. This is a game built with the idea of you're a player and all your game master decisions are going to be draw off of this deck or roll on this table to see what happens, and then you do the role playing. It'll let you know what happens if you succeed or fail on your rolls. It's all very straightforward, and we're going to play through it pretty simply. Now, normally, I would make a character right off the bat. We are not doing that today. I went ahead and made a character in advance because usually when I do this, it's either a game I haven't played in a very long time, or it's a game I've never played before. So I'm learning the game from the get-go as a solo player. I make my own mistakes, I do foolish things, and it's more entertaining that way, in my opinion. And this is no different. I've seen people play a little bit of Seekers Beyond the Shroud. I've read the book somewhat. I've never actually played it until today. So we're going to discover how the game works together. And in doing so, I decided I needed to make a character in advance so that it didn't eat up a huge amount of time, which I was going to need by, you know, all the blathering I've done thus far discussing what about. So turns out it's not a huge difficulty making a new character right from the get-go. Not. What it is, instead, is it's got kind of the same problem with the writable PDFs or character sheets that I find with Dungeons & Dragons, in that the text is exceedingly too small and very impossible for my 52-year-old eyes to read. So if I have difficulties reading something, I apologize in advance. Now then, so the character I made is Brandon Fry. He has the background of bookworm, which means he's a kind of sickly dude. I mean, that he's not this, you know, 92-pound weakling or anything like that. But he spent most of his time through his youth and early adulthood basically cooped up. He does, for one reason or another, he has had an avid fascination with the occult since youth. And so he's been reading books and discovering other books and digging deeper and deeper and deeper into the occult, and has, as one of his things he got for his background, a USB stick full of dozens upon dozens upon dozens of digital versions of ancient occult tomes. So he's got all kinds of information at his fingertips. He also has a small occult token called a Desert Rose, which allows him to hold in some power. He comes with a pistol and a knife, which is interesting because he's in London. This game is based out of London, UK. Turns out, strangely enough, the center of the occult world wasn't Delphi, as the ancient Greeks thought. They made an oopsie. Turns out their basic thoughts on occult geography were a little bit skewed, and it turns out it's actually underneath London. Which is okay. Luckily, there were magicians who were able to figure out, oh, yeah, they were off by thousands of miles, found the actual location, and built a massive complex underground under London called the Umphoros, which is a meeting ground of the four major, I think it's four, yes, the four major secret societies. And they basically come together to hold each other in check so that no one society gets too much power. Because in the past, when one gained too much power, they kind of went nuts with it and it wreaked all kinds of havoc. They can't have that anymore for the sake of the world and the universe. It'd be a bad thing. So I went ahead and made my character. It's got strength, dexterity, constitution, will, intelligence, and charisma. Remember what I said about old school revival games? Yep, those are the basic stats you'd use in those style of games generally. And minor, average, between 11 and 15. I went up high on dexterity, will, as my two high stats. Then I'm a little less on charisma and intelligence, a little lower on con, and my dump stat was strength. Because he's a academic, as opposed to, you know, useful. He's not much in a fight. His attributes are quite low. His highest skill, I mean, his skills actually are quite low, but that's the way you have to start. By default, his highest skill is parry at 52. These are by percentage. And the only reason that, he didn't put any points into it. It's your strength plus dexterity times two. That turns out to be 52. Normally, all stats are capped at 50. You can put no more than 50 points in them. So, well, I just noticed that I screwed up there. I need to double check that. I think I put points in occult knowledge, and I don't think you're allowed to with points in occult knowledge. Why would I have done that? It was staring me right in the face. Yep, not available for skill up. So that's 40 points that I can spend elsewhere. Why did I do that? Well, can't put any magical liturgy. I will put 10 in first aid. I will put 10 in pistols, 10 in one-handed melee, and 10 in unarmed. Yeah, that seems fine. Now, just because I'm, you know, a bookworm doesn't mean I don't know how to fight, is the way I was looking at it. And I want to survive for a little while. It'd be nice to survive the first game. Really would. Anyway, so I got my skills set up. I got my, figured out my health, soul, sanity, and vril. Vril is your magical power. Health is your basically hit points. Soul is your hit points when you're in the astral plane. Sanity is sanity. You played Call of Cthulhu, you get the idea. Don't lose all your sanity. It's a bad thing. Unfortunately, since I'm a bookworm, I have minus 100 favor in all of the four orders to start with. Kind of puts me in a hole. Like I said, I have the USB stick. I have the Desert Rose. I have a pistol and a knife as my gear. Everything else doesn't matter. Yes, there's maximum number of slots for gear, but as a general rule, I'm not going to be walking around with a bunch of stuff anyway. So, don't care. I have no magic to start with. So, basically, this is a guy who has discovered there really is this occult world that the normies can't see. He's found out enough to be dangerous, and so he has gained information about the Umphoros. I think that's what it's called. But he's gained knowledge about this. Umphalos, yes. And he's going to go there to try to learn, gain knowledge or influence, and basically just try to expand his mind and abilities. So that's where we're going to pick up from. And we're going to, I've printed a blank grid sheet because we're going to need this for when we get a mission. Basically what I have in mind is to get a mission, do that mission, which they say missions should take roughly about half an hour each. And when you play the game, if you just jump in with a, hey, let's go to the Umphalos, do a little bit, spend some of our money that we have, because they have a special currency that you can use there. Sell some stuff, buy some stuff, try and do an event at the Umphalos, maybe pick up a mission and go do the mission. You're looking at half an hour to 45 minutes of your time, which is great. That's one of the best things about a solo role-playing game, is instead of sitting and spending hours upon hours upon hours of preparing a game and running the game and, you know, playing the game and spending your whole afternoon doing it. Generally, these are sit down, fire and forget. You're using random oracles to figure everything out, and you can just play as long as you want to. You keep notes as to what's going on, and when you want to stop, you stop. When you want to pick it back up, you pick it back up. If you got half an hour to an hour to play some, you play some. It's great. Anyway, so, like I said, we have Brandon. He is a newbie into this world, and he is about to step into a much bigger world. So he found his way down to the Omphalos. And if I'm butchering that name, I apologize. I don't know Greek. Which I envision as this massive Gothic structure carved into the bedrock of the British Isles. If you have read the Dresden Files and think of the architecture in Edinburgh, which is the citadel of the White Council underneath Scotland, it's ancient. It is this Gothic cathedral-like structure, a maze of housing and study locations and libraries and whatnot. Anything a wizard could want or need is there. A huge meeting hall, all of it. Now, that's what I envision the Omphalos as being like here. Only, unlike Edinburgh, you can actually access it from the surface, if you know the way. And Brandon here has found out the way. Now, we have to determine what happens when he goes there. So, let's just find that little chapter. Okay, now there are, like I said, there are four different factions here in that are tied to Omphalos. Each one has a percentage chance of actually being here on any given day. So, the first one, and I cannot recall their name offhand, it is quite small, hard to read. Casa Sciente, they are on site. I give a little mark. How about the Cadmonites? They as well are on site. Mesu Belesh or Beresh are not, and the Sida are not. Only the first two are on site. Now, we're going to roll a d20. There are daily events that might be occurring. I have a six. Six is Urza the Mindmender. Urza is in town, and he's offering his services. Through a combination of hypnosis, psychology, and magic, he can heal your mind. For 100... Oh, I cannot recall what the currency is called here. You may regain 10 sanity. This only works once a month, so if you've already been healed by Urza, ignore this event. Well, Urza is a unique chap, kind of a grizzled old man. And as I wander into this complex, I'm approached by him. Healing, healing of the mind. Only 100. No, it's okay. I'm good. Only something the insane would say. But perhaps another day. And he wanders off to bother someone else. Okay. That put me a little off my Wheaties. Now then, let's roll on a random encounters table to see if there is a random encounter to be had. Well, I guess there always is, but... One, a fight. As I wander into a wider hall full of people of all different types, wandering around, chatting, doing, you know, buying and selling, different groups grouped together that are, you know, kind of, you can see them distinctly staying away from each other. So there's obviously some animosity there. Well, it looks like one person bumped into another. Was it intentional? I don't know. All I know is suddenly a fight erupts right in front of me. And they start yelling at each other in a language I don't understand. Anyway, they're yelling and shoving, and in the swirling melee, a swift kick come from somewhere, and I just got a broken nose. So if I go on a mission, I get to start with D20 fewer hit points. And of course, I rolled a 19. I lose 19 hit points. Oh, that's just lovely. I don't think I'm really... It's not too bad. I start with 101 instead of 120. Nevertheless, ow. So I stagger back, holding my nose, looking all stunned. And while I stumble back against a pillar that appears to be made of black stone, perhaps basalt, and its coolness against my back, I'm stunned and just, what the heck's going on? A swarthy man wanders up and says, apologies for the rudeness, reaches up, grabs my nose, squeezes and twists. There's a shocking amount of pain, but my nose is still bleeding, but not, it's set. And he hands me a tissue, which I rush up again to stop the bleeding. And he wanders off. Is he scraping the blood off into a vial? Oh, no. I'm thinking that's a very bad thing. But soon he's lost in the crowd, and, well, I do have a tissue for my nose. It smells vaguely like jasmine, if I could smell. Ugh. Why am I here again? Oh, yes, infinite magical power. Ugh. The things I do to get ahead in life. Right. So, those were random things that occurred. Oh, it could have been worse. Believe me, it could have been a lot worse. And this happens every time you visit. Not necessarily a fight, but something like that happens every time. Now then, like I said, there's two orders on site at this time. Causa Scientiae, which is Latin for the sake of knowledge. I've learned that they're a unique or kind of organization. They care not for politics or inter-order struggles. Their goal is to understand the nature of reality, more specifically, the nature of supernatural reality. Each member is a weird fusion of tough monster hunter, badass, and geeky lab-oriented arco-scientist. They appreciate how the Omphalos provide structure and new recruits, since their expeditions often result in lots of dead adepts. Their role in culling supernatural threats makes them very respected and valued among the community, and any adept joining them will surely learn a few tricks to help them with their survival. They're generally considered aligned with order, and they provide some pretty nifty abilities. I like that group. That probably is going to be my main focus, is getting on their good side. Then we have the Cadmonites. They're an ancient organization founded on Kabbalistic principles and ideas. They seek to return the world to the state of primordial man before the original sin. As an old group, they're fairly conservative and skeptical of the new ways, but are happy to support the kind of structure the Omphalos provides, since their ultimate goal is harmony and order at any cost. According to their leaders, modern changes to the occult community have only brought chaos and dissent, making the Cadmonites' job of bringing the world closer to God more difficult. They are happy to work with anyone willing to do some dirty work for them. They are seeking one who can prove themselves worthy of becoming an avatar of Adam Cadmon to bring order back to creation. Right. So, yeah, nifty, but also not super my style. I see myself more of a studying monsters so that they can be destroyed type of guy. So Casa Scientiae seems more my style, especially since the other two are chaos-based, and they just happen to not be here today. At least their ambassador is not. There's members from all the different orders here, but they're lesser members and unable to give things like, you know, missions. So I'm thinking that I'm going to go and introduce myself to the representative from Casa Scientiae and basically do the paperwork, converse with a representative, and go do a mission. Because that sounds like fun. Let's see. I really need some favor. Starting out at negative 100 is not exactly my favorite idea, but it is what it is. All right, so I'm going to just kind of look around and see if I can find this Casa Sciente. And, well, up there ahead looks kind of like where I need to go. There's a large sign across a cordoned off area in the middle of this massive mezzanine with two big, huge words and smaller symbols below. Job fair. And it's got four, it's a big square. It's got four booths basically set up at the cardinal points. And two of them are manned with full implements, I mean, full entourages at each. Those are the ones off to the right. Off to the left, you've got booths that basically have one or two people standing around handing out pamphlets. So, yeah, the right-hand path seems like the way to go. Not so much the left-hand path. I think that kind of tracks with where my mind is at this point. And one is clearly the Cadmonites. The other is Casa Sciente, because it says in Greek, Casa Sciente, right above it. Yeah, got it. So I will step up. There's not really a line at either, more of just a gathering of people talking to representatives. So I'll just kind of wait my turn, and when I see someone become available, with no one talking to them, I'll step up and talk to the nice young lady, still holding that tissue to my nose, my eyes slowly blackening, and she'll look up from the clipboard, the paper she's writing on, it's on a clipboard. She'll look up and her dark amber eyes will kind of widen. And she was like, you've had a rough morning.
Yes, I absolutely have. Thank you.
So sorry that your introduction had to be this way. So, looking for excitement and knowledge and adventure?
Not necessarily in that order, but sure.
We do offer an excellent medical and dental plan.
Okay.
And so, I'm led into the back to have a brief chat. Get to sit down. They give me some fresh tissues to shove up my nose so I don't have to do that voice anymore. Excuse me. It's kind of hard to hold my nose and talk. Setting off my gag reflex, I apologize. Good day. I see your name is Brandon. Is that right?
Yeah, Brandon.
Oh, yes, Brandon. So, my name is Templeton. Should write that down. Templeton. He's a CS rep. Yes, my name is Templeton. Thank you so much for sitting down with me to discuss your exciting new career with Casa Sciente. Do you know much about our organization?
I've done some research, yes, and you seem to fit with my background. I'm very research-oriented myself. Yes. Let me see. He opens up a ledger.
Oh, yes. Fry, Brandon. Yes, yes. We're quite impressed.
Blank, blank.
What? Are you surprised?
Yes.
All right. Listen, an organization such as ours doesn't survive century, nigh millennia, as one of the foremost powers on the planet without knowing what's going on in our neighborhood. So when a young adept such as yourself
shows promise, shows interest, and is clearly of a like mind, you're definitely going to gain our attention. So yes, we've been watching you for some time with interest. And if you had not come to us on your own, I'm sure I probably would have been knocking on your door sometime in the next, let's see, I had you down for December, actually. So you're a couple months ahead of schedule for you. You caught all the hints. Excuse me, did you say hints? Well, how do you think you got here in the first place? Did you think you found out about the Omphalos on your own? Oh. Sweet child. No. We led you here. We, among our brethren, of course, who all wish to meet you. But I'm glad you came to us first. Don't be surprised. Don't. No. It's in our nature. It's our... You should know it's our calling to research, to know, to learn. So, of course, we want to learn about, well, you and others like you. Others who can carry on the mantle after we are gone and dust. Others who will lead this cause into the next century and beyond. Who will carry on the name and the mission that we strive to complete. So, sign here, and we'll be prepared to go. He hands him a quill. I appreciate the feather quill. It's a nice touch, but there's no ink. I hands him a pocket knife. It's like that, is it? Would it be any other way, Brandon? Cuts hand, dips quill in blood, signs his name. So, let's get a mission, shall we? All right. Foes and adversaries, I want mission. Okay. Alchemy, sanctum, loot rewards. That's not what I'm looking for. Can't do those yet. Right. I know there's a thing in here for, and I can't find it at the moment, for randomizing a mission. I know there's some pre-built scenarios, but that's not what I'm looking for. Is it 58? Order missions are described in the next chapter. So let's in the next chapter. Or in the astral, I don't. Come on. Running orders for the missions. Running missions for the orders. No, I'm not tired at all. Not at all. All right, it's a D20 to see what I am offered. So that is a 16. Search. So you're tasked with finding a suitcase, the contents of which have not been specified. This suitcase has been hidden by the enemies of the order, so it will not be easy to retrieve. This takes place at a randomly determined site, with the exception of a museum or ancient ruins. Reroll if necessary. The suitcase will be found in the location furthest from the entrance. Unfortunately for you, the suitcase is locked behind an electronic lock, requiring a technology check to access. Once retrieved, you may either turn it in to succeed the mission, or choose to declare it lost and keep the contents. Failing the mission, but earning 100 and a roll on the valuables table. Well, that sounds fun. Now, this is where we first get to our use of the cards. I have, as part of the missions deck, they have a section that's just sites. You can randomly draw what site you're doing. Of course, we know it won't be a museum or ancient ruins. So I draw, and it's an abandoned complex. So we know that we are doing an abandoned complex. So now I can take all the other sets and put them away because it's got sections
for each and every type. So there's 7 different types of these. So we know it's an abandoned complex. That's simple enough. So I just got to put everything else away really quick so that they're not eating up space on my limited table space. Really wish I'd clean off the dining room table and have more room. That'd be so handy. Alas, it is not to be. Okay. So now I have 2 different types of cards for abandoned complex. I've got discoveries and I've got events. We also have encounters, physical. I'm going to set the astral ones aside, make each have a draw space next to it. Right. So now this is where the grid comes into play. We have to basically draw. Here it is. I lost my blank grid for this second. We need to draw a map. And it always starts at a main entrance. There will only be one of them. And we'll put that in the middle. We'll do a 4x2. Actually, make it easy. We're going to make it 3x3. So that if need be, we can have a hallway off of each, coming off each way. This is the entrance. 1 main entrance. Then we have a D10 plus 5 hallways. 14 hallways. There's a warehouse. Main entrance is 1. Office or room, that'll be 3D6. That's 2, 5. There's 7 office or rooms. 7 rooms. There's a D10 for rec room. If it's 1 through 5, there's no rec room. 6 through 10, there's 1 of them. Roll a D10. It's an 8. There's 1 rec room. 1 rec. And there's a parking lot. Okay. I actually should make that a little clearer. The ME is 40, 60, 20, which is, what do those stand for? Oh, these are basically percentage chances that a certain thing will occur. There's a chance that 1 will be an encounter, chance that 1 will be an event, and chance that 1 will be a discovery. So ME is 1. I'm going to call this the parking lot out here, basically out front. Parking lot, 50, 40, 30, hall, 14, and the hallway is 20, 60, nil. Warehouse, 1 of those, and it is 50, 50, 50. Okay, rooms, there are 7, and they are 50, 50, 50. Sounds like that's where the action's going to be. There's 1 rec room. It also is 50, 50, 50. So that's all of it. Now we just basically draw up a quick map using all of these elements we have. There's a hallway. Here's a hallway. And here's a hallway. There's 3 leading into, here's a room. Room here. You want to keep the less interesting things up front, the more interesting things like the warehouse and the rec room in the back. The room here, that's 3 of the rooms. Actually, 2 on that. Another hall. Here's another hall. Those are adding up quickly, but there's 14 of them, so it's going to have to. Here's a hallway. I'll make this a room. Those, this a room. There's only 2 more rooms to go before interesting things happen. Right. Here, 6, hallway, and another hallway here. Yeah, I know this is boring as heck, but it needs to get done. 8, 4. Yes, 8 hallways. Room. 7. So we're done with rooms. Let's see. I'm going to put a rec room here. There's another hallway. Hallway. This is in. Parking lot is in. Room is in. I need a large warehouse, and I still need how many hallways? Three? That's a lot of hallways still. Well, I can have things circle back around too. So let's get a rec room in here. Aha. I know what we're going to do. Very large house back here. Hallway. So there's my warehouse. There's 14 hallways. So we're done there. Good. We got it all. I have a map. Yay me. All right. So now we start at the main entrance, but the parking lot is technically, actually, you know what? I'm not going to have the parking lot out front. I'm going to have the parking lot, an internal lot here beside the warehouse, connected up right there. That makes more sense. This cult wants their people to have their cars nice and protected from, you know, the bad elements in the neighborhood. Okay. So you always start at the main entrance. And what you do is now we have to figure out what happens at each of these locations, which means I need to find a quick bit about each of these, how you read the locations. Okay, right. I think it's enemy, event, and discovery. Right. Now, first thing I have to do before we get really into this is I need to shuffle these cards because they've never been shuffled before. And I shuffle these much like I do a tarot deck, which is to say the idea of taking them and shuffling them as one would a standard deck of cards is completely anathema. You don't do that. That's a bad idea, son. How you ruin your cards. These I spent money on. I am not going to. Also, they're custom. So no, not going to mess with that at all. Yeah, those are events. Okay, so yeah, it's literally enemies, which is the encounters deck, then event, then discoveries. Discoveries are the least likely to be found. That's where you find cool stuff. Loot, like from an old-style dungeon. They're hard to come by. If we succeed in this mission, we'll gain 150 rep with the group we're trying to join, and we're going to gain 500 money towards these guys that we'll be able to then spend, and that will be awesome. Now, since we're an hour and 15 minutes in already, let's get started, shall we? Say this is an old warehouse. Okay, it's an abandoned complex, right? So this is big galvanized steel door ahead of me. It's got a chain lock on it, but upon looking at it, it's just there for show. He's able to easily remove it. It's there basically to make people think the place is locked, but it really isn't. And so he's going to go inside. Now, main entry has a 40% chance of an encounter. So we'll roll, and it's a 28. So let's draw for an encounter. Inside the main entry, we find a vessel in the dark, an adept that has pacted with an entity and is currently a vessel, manifesting their powers via spells and occult knowledge. Really? Right off the bat, huh? Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead, and this has its stats. I'm going to go ahead and roll initiative. Now, initiative is done kind of uniquely in this game. You roll a d20, and you want to exceed their initiative. And if you do so by 5 or more, you get surprise upon them. Well, I didn't. I got a 3. Now, he has an initiative of 12, so he has surprise on me, So I'm going to say he heard the chain being removed from the door, and as I slide it open, he attacks. And since he's the vessel of an supernatural entity, he's not going to open fire with his gun. He's going to cast a spell. Shock Mind. So we're going to take a quick look in the magic area. Oh, spell casting. Shock Mind. That's probably in the combat spells or offensive spells. Yep, it is. They force your vril into the target's mind, stunning them for D3 turns. Right. So you cast a spell, and I have to try to defend, right? Let me take another quick look at something. Again, first time playing. Luckily, they have this, if you backed it on Kickstarter, you get this cool player's guide, which helps you with your abilities. You running you whatever you're doing, right? And what I'm going to do is quickly check out a skill that I happen to have is psychic defense. Luckily, I pumped points into psychic defense like crazy because I'm not a moron. Okay, yes, I am, but that's beside the point. All right, combat skills. Psychic defense. Create defensive barriers and deflect attacks while in the dangerous astral plane. I'm not in the astral plane. That doesn't help me any. So, right. Don't tell me I have to reroll my character so quickly. Come on now. All right. Let's see that again. What happens if you're stunned? Well, that spell is you're stunned for D3 turns. One turn. Okay. So they hit me, and as I'm stunned, I cannot respond. So I'm going to lose initiative then. And then they're going to attack again. Now, the vessel says, will not cast Shock Mind twice in a row. So it's going to run up and try to knife me in the head or someplace else, you know, soft and meaty, because apparently I am quite soft and meaty. Very first freaking game. All right, what's its melee combat skill? Oh, that's right. I have to roll to defend. So it attacks. This time I get to defend. Oh, where is my happy little 2d10? There we go. I can parry, which is probably my best option. Because pulling weapons is not even a concern. So I'll grab my knife and parry his knife attack with my own. All right, I rolled a 92. Yeah, I failed. So I take how much damage? A d10 plus 15. So 16 damage. That drops me to 85 hit points. Keep in mind, this is the first room. The first room. Right. So I parried. I'm now going to attack back with my knife. That's an 88. What's its... Yeah. I failed to attack him. Man, he's got a lot of vril, too. And a lot of hit points. And this isn't even a champion. This is a basic. Just, yeah. Cards, you have completely... I'm changing dice. Okay, it's going to knife at me again. I'm going to try to defend. 71. So he stabbed me again for 24 more. I'm down to 61. 1 point above half of my hit points. One. Okay. So I will attack back. I was trying to parry. I will slicey dicey at the guy. Hey, look at that. Oh my God. That would have been great. Except for I have a 38 and I rolled a 47. So I still miss. Oh God, this sucks. This is what happens when you create a bookworm for a fighting game. All right. Oh, wait, he can shock mind again.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
I always said I'm a mean game master to myself. So let's do that, shall we? Yeah. It's going to cast away. Wom, wom, wom. And I recall it's been like just a couple minutes. So as I recall, it don't have a defense against it. Okay. Shocks me for another D3 turns. Yep. That's 3.
Oh, no.
Okay. So I am stumbling and I don't get to defend myself against that knife attack, which is for 19 total, 41. That's another 59 hit points lost. 59 hit points. Oh, put that off. I'm sorry. I'm down to 2 hit points. Now, it got its 3 strikes while I was stunned, and barely I am still alive, and now it gets to act again. What exactly am I going to do? I have to parry this attack. I have to roll a 52 or less, or my character is dead. Guaranteed. I have a 52% chance of succeeding here. Come on, low roll. That is a 47. I parried the strike. Now, let's take one quick look at the player's hit. Go to page 5 for combat. Did not have surprise. Oh, parrying grants a free counterattack at half damage. Well, I've parried twice, so what is my knife damage again? You mean this kit, it doesn't happen to have things like weapon damage? Seriously? It has everything else, but no weapon damage. Okay. We will go look in the gear section momentarily because I get to make 2 half damage strikes on this puppy before I take my last action. And my last action, oh, it's a doozy. It is a I have such a grand plan in store. It is so good. You're going to be so impressed with my awesome, awesome plan. Yeah, it's a D10 plus 15. So D10, 5 plus 15 would be 20. It took 10 damage from that. The other time, 10 and 15 is 25. Half damage round up would be 13 more damage. For a whopping 23 damage I've done to this thing. This vessel has taken 23 out of 130 hit points. He's been cut enough to know that he's been cut, but that's all. Now, I have an amazing plan. A plan that is so amazing because this is not D&D. It is especially not 5th edition. And you know why that's important? Because there are no attacks of opportunity. I run. Oh, I run. I run so fast. With my action, I book it so hard in the opposite direction. I am getting out of here. I am abandoning this mission so quick. Luckily, there are no repercussions for abandoning a mission right off the bat. You have to abandon 3 missions before you really start taking negatives from the group that gave you said mission. But since I have abandoned it, it is gone. I drew up that wonderful little map. Took, what, 10 minutes of time or so? I got in the front door. No, nay, I didn't even get in the front door. I opened the front door and got magicked by an amazingly powerful lackey who was guarding the front door. Sliced and diced down to 2 hit points.
I took 118 hit points. And I'm just going to say I ran away. And since the vessel was charged with protecting the main entry, it did not chase. It just went back to its position and closed the door. And through arcane magics, the lock lifted up off the ground and went back to its position, appearing to be locked, but it really was not. And thus ends the sad tale and adventure of Brandon Fry into the dark and arcane world. I believe he's more suited to being a BMX rider. He's going to do anything opposite of investigating the arcane. He poked his head into the supernatural world and decided, yeah, he was found wanting and ran like a little bitch. But unlike many of my characters, he actually survived. Unfortunately, this wasn't really a great indication of how Seekers Beyond the Shroud can work. Yes, a lot of these adventures are going to go this way. It is what it is. But it is also pretty unfair that I drew a vessel on the very first draw. I mean, I could have easily gotten the next draw, a raging spirit of a deceased person full of hate for the living, having possessed a human body to inflict violence upon the world. Instead of a knife, it pummeled for the same amount. No, not quite the same amount. A little less. With even more hit points. Less virile. No spells. This would have been a more appropriate thing to fight. What would I have gotten if I had drawn something else? Children of Erlik, a member of an ancient Mongolian death cult, thought to have disappeared centuries ago. Back and stronger than ever with their dark god on their side. Wielding a sword. And a P226. And it also knew shock mind. It was actually worse than the vessel. Oh, but could I have possibly gotten this? A hunter, a lone wolf that has decided to take justice in their own hands after having suffered under the power of occult forces. But no spells. But it had light Kevlar armor, 20-year-old rye whiskey flask. When consumed, it actually heals for 2d10. A hunter's knife and a Glock. So it goes. Yes, Icarite, a black magic practitioner that feeds on psychic energy. Oh my god, it heals for 50% of the damage it deals. And it attacks with a ritual dagger. But it doesn't cast spells, so that would have been something. Point is, I just became very unlucky indeed, that I drew a dude who could cast spells right off the get-go. Keep in mind, if it had been a seasoned bonus, an elite version, it would have had 15 defense and 15 to offense on top of what it already has. Yeah. So, in the end, good run. Yeah, run. It was fun, in a way, kind of, I guess. I definitely will be playing this again. Eventually, at some point. But see, here's the thing. God, I never even got to an event or a discovery in that section. That's just, oh boy. Anyway, I will play this again at some point, like I was saying. But not soon. And there's a reason for that. What you're hearing maybe has better sound quality than what you're going to be hearing starting on Monday and for the next few months at the very least. And there's a good reason for that. This is actually being recorded after pretty much every show through October of 2021, with the exception of next Halloween's show. You see, I'm a little bit ahead. I've been playing these solo games for a while, for weeks. And every weekend, I'm able to record a couple months' worth of adventures. And I've been putting them down, recording them, getting them saved for posterity as part of this podcast.
And so soon, by the end of October, for sure, by the end of October 2020, I will have all of the shows through 2021 done. And I will be getting ready. I'll be taking a couple weeks off, but then in November and December, I will be doing a lot of work on the shows in 2022. I've already got them planned out. And there's a good reason for that, because I have a lot of games that I want to play. Some of them are standard role-playing games. Some of them are designed for solo play or cooperative play. Many I'll be using the Game Master's Apprentice on, which you can get at DriveThruRPG, by the way. Some will be using Mythic, some using CRGE. You can get those at DriveThruRPG as well. Some, you can find many oracles, solo role-playing oracles for free, like CRGE. Others cost a few bucks, like Mythic. Same with Game Master's Apprentice, but they're worth it. Mythic you can buy as its own standalone game, either printed or as a PDF. Or I have both. I have that, and I have the Mythic Game Master emulator deck, so I can draw cards instead of rolling on tables. I find it easier to have the cards that I can draw. Like with Game Master's Apprentice, I can just draw cards instead of rolling dice and having a book I have to open up and flip between this book and that book and another book. If I can just use one or two different decks, sometimes I use Mythic in conjunction with Game Master's Apprentice. Because if I don't come up with something good on one, I can draw from the other to get more inspiration. And it's so much fun. It really stretches your role-playing capabilities. And if you are an aspiring author, a lot of people actually use these systems to help them write stories, especially if they're having difficulties with coming up with ideas. They can use something like Game Master's Apprentice, which doesn't even need to have to be tied specifically to its to a different game like Dungeons and Dragons. You can just grab the fantasy deck and it'll tell you how to make a basic character, and you'll use that drawing on the cards to see what happens, make NPCs, and to figure out what's going on. And if you don't like something, if something doesn't fit, doesn't give you inspiration for that scene, you just draw again until you get something that fits, until you get something that inspires you. And as you write down notes, you then can use that to flesh out and form these stories that you want to tell. Even if when you read through it, you're like, nah, that really doesn't work. But hey, it gives you an idea of where to go. Maybe you lose that idea, but you put in something else that came to mind, rearrange some stuff, and bam. You have a story. And a lot of people use these more than you would think. I'm not saying this is Stephen King level of writing, but it's something. It's better than just sitting at your typewriter staring at a blank form all day. I'm sorry, this is the new millennium. Staring at your keyboard all day with a blank screen. Better than that. But anyway, I digress. Point is, I'm really into solo role-playing, especially since we're in the pandemic right now. And I think it's a great way to get your role-playing on without, exposing yourself to all manner of disease or having to sit in a room with everyone wearing masks and staying 6 feet away from each other, which is kind of hard to do when you're, like, in a role-playing situation. Not exactly the easiest way to get together, and yeah. So, something worth checking out. And if you're, while you're checking them out, go ahead and check out Seekers Beyond the Shroud. It is a very unique game. Very interesting. I like how in-depth it has. It's got the built-in oracles and the ideas, and the deck, the mission deck that you can get off of DriveThruRPG is super cool. Definitely worth your money. So probably wouldn't hurt to do a couple random explorations of its areas before you go and do an official mission, though. I could have done that. And I was like, nah, you know, let's just jump right in. And I got sliced and diced before even stepping foot inside the building, as you all know. Oh, God, that's an embarrassment. Anyway, so till next time, which will be this coming Monday, I'm Squirmy, reminding you, well, first of all, happy Halloween. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And I hope you come back for the start of the official season. And also reminding you that if you can't play with your friends, you can always play with yourself.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you want more content like this, come on over to squirmy.com. We've got more podcasts, blogs, our own Discord server, and so much more. Also, don't forget to join us again next week as your intrepid guide Squirmy delves once more into the world of solo role-playing.